This is Mitch McGarry of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht. And today, John Hamm, Jay Smith are with me to discuss a game that was one of the most incredible games in Thunder history. I think like the only game I can think of that would be more incredible is the Game 5 of the Clippers series, but that wasn't coming off a blowout like this. The Thunder win 98-97 in San Antonio, which only one other team has done this whole season, and that team happens to be the best regular season team of all time. John Hamm, what does this mean?
Everything, clearly. I mean, the series has been turned on its head, right? Look, I don't know. I'm just pleased that the effort was there last night. I mean, even if I was preparing myself at about the 5-minute mark of the game to come away saying, well, this is a good moral victory for them, because I just expected them to, you know, collapse and tumble like they usually do. And by the way, they almost did. You know, the very end of the game, I think, kind of masks some of the mistakes that they made and a lot of the drama surrounding that. But hey, I mean, still, they came away with what they desperately needed in this series, and that was a win in San Antonio.
Jay,
yeah,
we were together. I need to know. I just need to know your thoughts after coming down from that crazy high where I literally jumped on your back.
It was like the most. It's just everything you thought. Like the most stressful, glorious 10-minute stretch of basketball of the season, right? And you saw it from the get-go, like from the beginning of that game, you saw Oklahoma City came out with a different mentality. They were engaged defensively. Russell Westbrook, I have the stats here, in the first quarter came out and was 5-8 to start. He had 6 free throw attempts made for him. Had 14 points first quarter in tone for this team. And it carried through. The crazy thing that they were up by 13 in the first quarter. The second quarter, Popovich benches everybody except for Aldridge. They make this run, they catch back up, and they keep going. And you could kind of feel, in myself and a lot of Thunder fans, you could feel that fear building, right? Like what John was talking about, like, oh, no, here it goes. Here it goes. You know, they're going to run away with it from here on out. But the Thunder stopped the bleeding and ended up taking the lead in the halftime. And then it happened again in the third quarter. It happened again in the third quarter where the Spurs would take the lead, but the Thunder kept battling back. And for most of the game, and we're going to talk at length about it, I know, but for most of the game, the Thunder were in control. Mm-hmm. The end of the game was insanity, but the Thunder were playing as the aggressor and really controlling a majority of the game for most of the night.
Yeah, no question. And let's talk about the end of the game, because that sequence was insane, and it starts for me with Russell Westbrook hitting a pair of free throws, putting the Thunder up 4 with 18 seconds left. And on the next possession, Serge Ibaka fouls LaMarcus Aldridge on a 3-point shot.
I said bad words. I said really bad words.
It was devastating because you're
It seems like that was a call. And maybe I'm assuming too much about Popovich, but it seems like that was the intentional play. Like LaMarcus Aldridge going around. He knew that Serge, if he pump fake him, Serge would lead his feet because, number one, he's not the most disciplined defender. Number two, he's not used to guarding perimeter players. And so as part of that, the pump fake drew Serge out. He jumps into him. And you know, LaMarcus Aldridge is just playing an incredible series. And I think we'll talk about a little bit of this as well. And I think some of that is a little bit the Thunder just allowing him the single coverage. But a play I don't want to miss before we get too far into it is one of the greatest assists I've ever seen. And it just got overlooked because of all the insanity. Tony Parker penetrates, and he's going to the rim, and you're like, we got this covered. And then he throws this behind-the-back bounce pass to LaMarcus Aldridge at the top of the perimeter for a 3. That was the biggest shot for the Spurs all night. They were in control. They were up by 4 and ended up getting – actually, they're up by 5 at that point. Got it within 2, and then, you know, the playoff or the free throws and the 3-point and all that stuff got it within 1. So – but yeah, John, maybe you and Andrew can talk kind of through the rundown of that last I don't know, 15 seconds of insanity.
Yeah. I'll give the rundown of it, and then let's talk about, like, I mean, like, everything is centered on, like, this Dion shove, you know, but let's talk about, like, the real implications of that play and everything that happened within it. So 13 and a half seconds left. The Thunder have no timeouts because they just took their last timeout. They're trying to run a play to get Durant the ball. Waiters is the inbounder. A lot of people question whether he should be the inbounder. I guess my question there, we can just ask the question. If it's not Dion, who should it be? Like, who would you have put there as the inbounder if not Waiters? Either one of you.
Yeah, the only other guy I could think of is possibly Morrow.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's done that throughout the season. But otherwise, I'm not sure who else you'd go with, quite honestly.
Yeah, and the Spurs were incredible in the inbound play. They shut down everything. I don't really know what Dion was supposed to do. He couldn't call a timeout. He did what he could to get Durant the ball, and that was shoving Manu Ginobili, who was in his grill, who had several violations himself, stepped on the line, probably crossed that invisible plane that you're not supposed to cross, and he shoved
him. That would have been a touchdown. If this was football, he crossed the plane, he got a touchdown.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So a lot of people were talking about, like, some old ref that's on Twitter said that if he doesn't cross, like, break the plane. I can't remember what his wording was exactly, but had a three-point shooter cross the line like that on a corner three, as the Thunder seem to do all the time, you know, getting the ball, taking a step, stepping out of bounds, and said they would have called that out of bounds. Like, yep. How in the hell can you use one language for any sort of out-of-bounds play and then say, well, he didn't fully cross the plane, so therefore it wouldn't have been a violation? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. No. And so I don't know
if you have just an like if sorry, if you just like if a guy takes a three-point shot and, oh, his toe was on the line, it's a two.
Right.
Absolutely. Not because he didn't fully have his foot across the line. Like, that's a bullcrap response to that. So yeah. Dion messed it up. And that's the crazy thing is so Manu crosses the line. Dion shoves him. They pass the ball into Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant gets fouled by Danny Green. They get the ball.
You're in like full Thunder Homer mode right now. I love it.
But then there's the Thunder foul, like three people underneath the basket. Like, it was just this like series of plays, and then a fan grabs Steven Adams' arms. Like, it's the craziest ending to it that I've ever experienced.
And kind of in the middle of that, like, Dion lobs the ball up to Durant. It should have been a ball he could get, but when he was catching it, he fell. And I don't even know how much Danny Green – I wouldn't have called that a foul on Danny Green. I think that it was as clean a play as there was in that last sequence, if there was a clean play.
Or it's a no call, right? Like, it's a no call even if there is some sort of contact.
He throws the ball to Mills, who gets to the rim, and miraculously Steven Adams is there. Like, Adams wasn't, like, standing there waiting for him. Like, Adams got back in position to contest that shot. Russ was there, too. Russ was helping out on Ginobili when the ball got to Ginobili. Ginobili made an incredible pass to Patty Mills in the corner that looked, at the time, wide open. The pass is on its way, and you're like, oh, crap. This is a wide-open Patty Mills three for the win. And Adams...
How did he airball? How did he airball that shot?
Did Adams touch it? Did Adams get a piece of it?
I think he did. I thought he did.
I thought he did, too. I've watched it a few times, but, like, what Adams did as for a 7-footer to do everything he did on that last possession is ridiculous. Like he and Slater said this, there's a lot of people that said this is his best game of his career. Not only because he put up incredible stats, 17 rebounds, monster dunks. Oh my gosh. Just these dunks that just made everything in your body come alive. But his defense was incredible. Like that end of game sequence was, and it was just a highlight of that. He ended up airballing, whether it was tipped or not. I don't know for sure. But then the sequence under the basket where Serge Ibaka basically pulls both Spurs bigs, almost trying to pull them to the ground, pulling their jerseys. Mad scramble for the ball. LaMarcus Aldridge tries to kind of like flop to see if he can get a foul call. Doesn't call. Serge Ibaka ends up with the ball. buzzer sounds, Popovich is pissed, Thunder win. It was great.
Yeah, and there's a few other things just to note of that play. So number one, Deion, if he is the guy, which one of the things that a lot of people on Twitter were talking about is use Collison as that guy. Collison, you know, lots of just intelligence. But I don't know. It's a strange thing anyway. If he were to somehow get the ball back, I don't know. And so not that I trust Collison less than Deion on the free throw line. But anyway, so one of the things that you have to do is a quicker decision. So those plays, it's just like a quarterback in football. Is you're not going to get a long window, especially with Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard following your two best free throw shooters. And so for me, what needs to happen is Russ, he moves back toward the Spurs goal, right? And this quick movement, you've got to throw that ball in front of him and throw it to him quickly, right? And then, or he comes back across and he can throw it that way, but you have to be way precise on when you throw it and where you throw it. And it's just hard to do that for anybody, but it's really hard, let alone to trust somebody like Deion, who doesn't, not the fact of Deion's decision-making in every other aspect of basketball, but really just in the fact that that's a hard thing to ask anybody to do, especially somebody that's not used to playing that thing. But one thing, once again, going back to the Homer-isms of being an Oklahoma City fan is there were off-ball fouls all over the place that were taking place on that inbound, right? Like shirts being grabbed, which is not an abnormal thing. But there are a couple videos and still shots that you saw where Kawhi is just grabbing a hold of Russell Westbrook's jersey as he runs away. And the truth is that it's kind of hard to get free from somebody when they're holding on to your clothes. and all of the hard thing is, and Zach Lowe said this, I'm just going to read his tweet. He said, all the focus on the end will obscure a great general response from Oklahoma City. They played harder, smarter, and had a response every time the Spurs got close.
Yep.
I think that's the biggest deal to me is all of that stuff is obscuring the fact that the Thunder came out and did everything that we wished that they would have after game one, right?
Oh, yeah. My deal with the Deion thing is if that was the only incident, if, you know, Ginobili hadn't done anything that he did, if there wasn't all the grabbing and all the pushing and then the fan pulling Steven Adams, and if none of that happened and it was the only isolated event and the Thunder got the ball inbounds to Kevin Durant, he hit two free throws, game is over, I would, like, you have all the room to complain. But the Spurs had a 3-on-1 fast break that Steven Adams shut down. And at that point, you just have to say, well, you know, we actually did have a great shot to win this game, but Steven Adams really didn't allow that to happen. So I just don't think there should be any beef there. I can understand why. I don't know how I'd feel if I was on the other end, but they had their shot. It's not like they didn't have a shot to win it. They did. They had a great chance, but it was just shut down by a better defensive play.
Yeah, me personally, I would much that situation have a 3-on-1 fast break than a timeout and a set play.
Right.
I mean, because this is, remember earlier in the season when the Thunder played Orlando and, you know, the Thunder got a rebound late. Billy Donovan is thinking about calling a timeout. Monty Williams tells him to keep going. And, you know, they came down and Durant got a three. And we talked about, oh, that's great. You know, keep them off guard. Just keep things moving. Don't let the other team set their defense. Yeah, I mean, San Antonio had a shot to win this game and quiet everything, and they didn't. And it just didn't happen that way. And unfortunately, a whole lot of focus is going towards those last 15 seconds or so, because the prior 47 or so was pretty good basketball as well.
It was. The bench overall, the bench was kind of a surprise in that Donovan totally went away from Collison, totally went away from Randy Foy, totally went away from Kyle Singler. And it was all just fantastic. He went with Cameron Payne, Anthony Morrow. And there's a part of you that's like, great, but why wait till now? You know, like, we know these guys can play. We know what they can do. We know they can offer a lot of things. Like, why don't you play them in a game versus the Bucks? Like, why don't you let them get some burn? Like, why would you let Cameron Payne sit for so long and play Randy Foy, thick man Randy Foy, and not play Cameron Payne, who we know is more talented, but just needs experience, when you could have got, I don't know, there's frustration there, but there's also like, awesome, like he did it. Like, this is what we want. Mm-hmm. Morrow's I wasn't particularly happy with the shots that Morrow got. He had two shots in isolation, which were kind of funny. He hit one of them, missed another. You know, you'll take that. But his floor spacing was great. Cameron Payne, man, like, he's not good at defense, but, like, it's just good to see the Rook get in there and get some experience. I thought Cantor played pretty well. He had a lot of really good defensive plays. He had three blocks last night. I'd have to look through his game logs, but that may be the first time he's ever had three blocks in his whole career. He played great. He did. He also had some defensive lapses where it was like, okay, get Steven Adams back in the game. But overall, I thought Cantor was great. Waiters was awesome last night on the defensive end. When he's a one-on-one defender, doesn't have to worry about guarding the pick and roll, doesn't have to worry about his man running all over the place. Like, he bodied up Kawhi Leonard and did a fantastic job on him. I hope that people talk about that today, beyond his elbow to Ginobili. I hope people like see the fact that Dion Waiters was valuable to the Thunder last night. Hit a monster three. It was the only shot that he made last night, but hit a monster three to put the Thunder up five and played fantastic defense on a guy who's going to be on the All-NBA first team. Man, he was key last night in his almost 25 minutes. But overall, like, the defensive intensity was great. LaMarcus Aldridge ended up with 41 points on 15 to 21 shooting, which is really good. But I felt like he had to earn every one. And, like, most of those shots, I was like, like, we'll take it because it was actually contested. He was incredible. But, John, who else stuck out to you on either side? What performances do you think that need to be noticed?
You mentioned Robertson and Waiters. So, you know, last night I tweeted out, and this is sometimes the danger of Twitter. I had tweeted out at that point that Dion and Robertson had played, I think, 39 floor minutes and scored as many points as Josh Huestis and I have. And, I mean, if you read that, you know, it probably came across critical of them. I'm like, oh, no, their defense is outstanding.
Yeah.
And so I got into it with my post-game partner, Jerry Ramsey, a bit last night because Jerry, you know, wasn't seeing the value in Andre Robertson because he brings nothing on the offensive end. Well, I mean, because of the offensive end, because of how, I mean, San Antonio was basically, you know, ignoring him.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part. And I'm like, look, the job he did on Kawhi Leonard, if he holds Kawhi, if he's part of the crew that holds Kawhi Leonard to 14 points, he doesn't get 22, that's an 8-point savings. I'll take it. I don't care if he scores or not, you know. So that defensive performance definitely does not need to go unnoticed because, I mean, this is exactly what the Thunder needed. And I thought Steven Adams summed it up greatly. You know, oh, we just tried tonight. We just tried. Yeah. Thank you for trying. I appreciate that.
Yeah, look no further than the plus minus. Like, Robertson was a plus 16 last night. I mean, obviously it doesn't look as good for Waiters because he did play a big chunk of minutes. They did play an all-bench lineup, which was mostly bench lineup, and it was just like, why is this happening right now?
Donovan stuck with that for way too long. It was KD at the four, and then four bench players, and it was Campaign, defensive liability, Morrow, defensive liability, Cantor, defensive liability. They did not get good results out of that.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, one of the things I was impressed with, so Serge Ibaka had a rough start to the game. First quarter, second quarter. In the first quarter, he was, you know, just 1 of 2, so only 2 attempts. And he was, you know, he wasn't great. 1 of 4 in the second quarter. But in the third quarter, he came out and continued to shoot with confidence.
Yep.
And ended up in the third quarter, he was 3 of 3. He ended up having 7 points and really was a huge difference maker in kind of stemming that momentum that the Spurs had put together. And ended up having a pretty good game altogether. And you know, he's such a big part of this. And he played good defense. And there were a couple of times Jeff McDonald, who's one of the bigger San Antonio sports writers, talked about his effect on the Spurs away from the ball. How, you know, some of those hesitations going to the rim are because they know that Serge is lurking again. And he hasn't had that intimidation factor most of the season, but him and Adams combined can really create some havoc down low and make some hesitation for some of the Spurs players. Adams was obviously, in my mind,
maybe the player of the game, not just because of what he did, but 17 rebounds is incredible, and giving them second chance buckets. And I don't know, he's just a big deal in this series and will be a big deal. So,
I mean, Adam's game last night, I mean, he gave you everything that you could have wanted. His toughness, he really helped set the tone for toughness with this team. His rebounding was incredible. His just effort on defense on every play. He was smart. He knew where to be. He's 20 freaking 2 years old. Like, he's,
that's remarkable.
I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, Chris Mannix was talking to Slater on a podcast a few weeks ago, and Mannix is like, I think he'll be a top 5 center. And like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, right. Like, he'll be lucky to be top 10. Not, and I love Steven Adams. I'm a huge Steven Adams fan. But man, like, if he can have that kind of defensive impact, if he can be a guy that can go catch lobs like that, like, he could be, man. Like, he's still so young. He still has so much potential. He's different than a guy like DeAndre Jordan in that he can be a passer. Like, I think that he could develop as like a high post passer where you can go to him for a little bit. Like, he's like a athletic Andrew Bogut. Like, that's, I think that's kind of his ceiling, is to be a guy like that who is just the best defensive player on the court, can pass, is smart. And if he can keep his athleticism, then like this dude, like, sky's the limit for this kind of guy. And man, he really showed up last night. And I don't know, John, what are your thoughts on Adams?
Oh, I'm with you all the way on that. You know, just the way the guy has improved by leaps and bounds for years been in the league in every aspect of his game. I mean, remember, he came into the league, he was a poor free throw shooter, and sometimes teams still want to do the hack-a-shack thing with him, but he's improved enough as a free throw shooter to where it's not really worth the risk anymore. In the athleticism, the defensive end, I still marvel. We talked about it earlier, but the way he stopped single-handedly that 3-on-1 break there at the end of the game, it's just mind-blowing. So, you know, you got that. And I'm, you know, we're about 24, 25 minutes into this so far. Haven't really even talked about the game that Kevin Durant had.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Russ, for example.
Or Russell Westbrook.
I'll tell you, you know, our friend and partner, Carson Cunningham, you know, he tweeted out before the game last night that the only way the Thunder wins is if the Slim Reaper rises.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, I retorted back with, oh, yeah, and if Ibaka produces, and if Russ puts under control, and if one of the wings produces, and if they give them, you know. I'll tell you, sometimes it may be that simple. Obviously, the defensive group was there, but Kevin Durant was phenomenal last night.
He was great. Russell Westbrook was really, really good. I think the thing is for Russ, for both of them, you still have that expectation, even though they're both atrocious in game one. In a lot of ways. And so for me, seeing them be the aggressors, seeing them defend, like Russell was actually defending for the most part of the game. They were hedging up. They were playing a pick and roll the best they played all season. Just being aggressive on both ends of it. And one of the things that I think is overlooked for a team that has historically been beaten up by turnovers, especially in the fourth quarter, they had 18 total turnovers. We're still, you know, still high for this team. It's kind of low, but they had only 2 in the fourth quarter. Right, one of the historical things for this team this season is that in those fourth quarters, when the pressure gets tight, they turn the ball over way too much. They only had 2 in the fourth quarter, one of which was the final one from Kevin Durant to Danny Green, kind of. And so, those are impressive things where they just protected the ball. They didn't lose their minds or get over. Over anxious or crazy toward the end of the game. They stay with themselves, and obviously the reward was they won the game.
Yeah, I mean, Durant, just seeing the ball go in for him, at least on three-point shots, he had 1-3 last night, 11 for 19, 57% from the floor, which is something he hasn't even been close to approaching in the playoffs. It was good to see him back. I thought Russ at the beginning of the game was fantastic. His just attacking, especially in the midst of the Spurs missing every shot that they could. I think that at one point they're like 1-for-12 or something like that. They were missing everything. They were missing layups. They were missing shots that were easy shots. It felt like the basketball gods were paying the Thunder back a little bit for every shot that fell in game one. Russ was incredible. He just took control of the game from the jump. He was attacking. He was getting to the free throw line. The Thunder got out to a pretty big lead, which I just thought was really key for this team to like actually see the ball fall in and actually see the ball miss for the Spurs. I think Durant had a quote that's like said something about them missing their first shot wasn't like a step in the right direction for the Thunder. So I mean,
there's 30 seconds into the game, and I said, I already feel better about this game, right?
Like, yeah.
Russ gets to the line, the Spurs miss a shot instead of like a wide open dunk by Kawhi, and I was like, all right, they're going to be in this at least for more than a quarter.
Yeah. I have a quick theory that's not basketball. Well, it is basketball related, but it's not Thunder related. It's about Chris Webber. So Chris Webber, traditionally, I don't like listening to him on the call. He's like the first tip, the Thunder ended up turning it over, and he was like, well, here we go, a continuation of game one. And it's just like, oh, really, Chris Webber? Okay, great. Great analysis there. And then at the end, like incredible win by the Thunder. He's just screaming and crying about the foul on Ginobili, just blah, blah, blah. Like, here's my theory on Chris Webber. I think Chris Webber does not like himself, and he sees a little bit he sees a little bit too much of the Thunder in himself. They never won a championship. They've had a lot of injuries like Chris Webber. And he hates himself. So I think that he hates the Thunder because he just sees too much of himself in the Thunder. And to see them win is just, it's too agonizing for him because it's something that he couldn't do as a king, as a guy at Michigan couldn't win at all. So I think this is just all interrelated. It's a lot of inner turmoil for Chris Webber. So I feel a little bit sorry for him having to call the Thunder games overall. But, man, I cannot stand listening to him on the call.
That is a great theory.
What it sounds like at the end to me is that he had money on it.
That's very possible. He was. That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. So one thing that somebody just tweeted, I just lost it, but I give credit to it. I'll give credit to it here in a second. But one of the things that they pointed out is that Robertson, Buck and Adams on the sweeper for 21 minutes had a net defensive rating of 55.3, which is just what you all have told me, an incredible number as far as their effectiveness on defense. Where Robertson. Go ahead, sorry.
Was it their defensive rating or their net rating?
Sorry, I'm trying to pull it up, and of course my internet is slow now. I think it was their defensive rating, but I don't know. Net rating, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm finding it.
I think it was their, I think you said it was their, if that's their net rating, like, whoa. I don't think, it's probably their defensive rating.
I think it was.
As a unit, which is like 55 defensive. I mean, that's definitely like small sample size theater. This is one game type of deal. But like, that just like shows the impact of those guys. And you'll see people, like, I think that everyone had a right to complain about Robertson playing game one because I thought he was totally ineffective on both ends. But I think that for last night, like, I thought he served a great purpose. I thought that he did a good job. He had three steals last night. He really did try to keep the ball moving. It's kind of hard to keep the ball moving when you're in the corner and you catch it and the ball just kind of is funneled to you. It's kind of hard to keep the ball moving. But he did try to do stuff with it when he got it. He didn't just hold on to it. He would either get it right back to his right back to the other guy, or he dribble it in. So I have to give him credit for that because he's not a shooter. He did fire away 1-3 that just was off from the minute it left his fingertips. But I give him a lot of credit on the defensive end. He really also set the tone defensively for this squad. Him and Adams and Ibaka, I thought all those guys were incredible. I thought Russ actually did a decent job last night. There were a few times where, you know, just a handful of times where I thought that he should have fought a little bit harder. But for the most part, I thought that Russ and Durant did a great job on defense, too. I was just really impressed with the effort of this squad overall.
So to restate that stat real quick, sorry, John. Darius Serrano on Twitter said, crazy stat from OKC San Antonio. And the 21 minutes that Adams, Ibaka, and Robertson shared the floor, the Thunder had a defensive rating of 55.3.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Pretty impressive.
That's phenomenal.
I was just going to bring up LaMarcus Aldridge, who has obviously been phenomenal this series. And, you know, there was some debate over, you know, at some point of the game, you see some, you know, some smart aleck pop up and, well, is Donovan going to learn how to double team a guy? I thought that they probably did the right thing with Aldridge. I mean, they doubled occasionally, but for the most part, they played him straight up because San Antonio is the type of team that can make, you know, if you double, they're going to make three passes in 2 seconds and get an open three. So that was my thoughts. I was curious what you thought about how the Thunder defended Aldridge last night.
I thought it was fine. Honestly, I think that you try to shut everything else down and make only LaMarcus beat you, and that's what they did. They played him one-on-one. I thought the one-on-one defense was actually fantastic. They doubled him a couple times, and it was effective. But trying to take away everything from the Spurs is just not going to happen. I think that's kind of partly what they tried to do in game one, is that they were trying to, they just had their hands in way too many cookie jars, just trying to make it, it just didn't work. I think they were almost confused as to who they should be going to. But letting LaMarcus just go one-on-one, like, he had a ton of crazy shots. He was incredible. He had 41 points last night. I thought he had a few really nice passes. He had some great defensive plays. But he was still a -3 at the end of the night. So if you can have a guy score 41 points but still be a negative in the box score plus-minus, great. Like, that's happened a lot in NBA history. A few teams did it to Steve Nash back in the day, where they're just like, all right, we're going to shut everything up. We're not going to let Steve Nash have 13 assists, but we'll let him have 30. And it was really detrimental to the Suns. And I don't know if that's a strategy that's going to work every night. But I do think that LaMarcus is on fire, and there's not a lot that you can do about it. Because, I mean, he may hit those shots double teamed. I mean, there's a lot of cases where he probably would, because there were a lot of just ridiculous shots that he made. So I thought the approach was good defensively. I thought the energy, like Jay said, on the pick and roll was fantastic. I thought the one-on-one coverage from Ibaka was good. So I don't really have any problems with it, because I just saw good defense. And I just saw better offense from LaMarcus, but still good defense.
So looking forward to game three, which is Friday night, obviously the Spurs will make some adjustments, and then obviously following that, Oklahoma City will be hopefully ready to do the same. What do you guys, John, maybe a little bit about what you're expecting about game three here in Oklahoma City on Friday? Man, with this team, it's been this way all season. What are you going to get from game to game? You know, have they kind of figured it out by now, or are they going to lapse back into a sense of false security or something? So, again, I would hope for more of the same out of this team. Donovan is not getting quite enough credit for the adjustments I think that he made in game two.
Yeah,
so we'll see if that continues. I'm ecstatic that he did not turn a singler or Foyer, didn't try to wedge Collison in there for a few minutes, because, you know, he's a big old veteran that knows San Antonio well. I thought he did an excellent job, so we'll see the evolution of that. San Antonio, they've still got some tricks they can pull. I mean, Boris Diaw hasn't played a whole lot, and I think that's a guy that could probably inflict some damage on this team. So I'm curious to see how the Jets game is going to continue to unfold here.
Yeah, I thought some of the interesting stats last night weren't necessarily like these regular box score stats, but just how many minutes each guy played. Like, for both teams, they had only one guy played over 40 minutes, Kevin Durant and LaMarcus Aldridge. And then, like, Russell Westbrook only played 37 minutes last night. I mean, that's kind of amazing that they win a game in San Antonio with Russ only playing 37 minutes. Adams played 37.
He got a little bit of foul trouble, which limited him a little bit. Otherwise, I would have been totally on board with playing him 42 or 43 last night.
Yeah, I think you're right. That probably did hamper him a little bit. But still, like, to win a game with only one of your superstars playing over 40 minutes, like, that's pretty incredible. I thought he did a great job. I think having the guts to go with Payne and Morrow was good, and I think it paid off. I think sticking with Deion Waiters down the stretch was a really good move for the team. Got him in a position to hit that big three. Yeah, I think you're right. As far as game three goes, I'm kind of done making predictions for this series. How about that? I don't have any predictions. I just hope that we get more games like this. Just really close, fun games. The Thunder, man, I just still am almost in disbelief at what they did last night, because it was such a big turnaround from game one. It felt like after game one that the turnaround was going to be too big, you know? Like, there's just no way they can go from this to playing great defense. Like, it just didn't feel like you can just flip that switch, but they did. Let's just hope that they decide to do it again, because I do think that the Thunder, and we've talked about this, like the talent level, like they can match the talent and maybe even be better talent wise. But are they going to play that great defense again? Are they going to be able to move the ball? I mean, the Thunder didn't really even move the ball all that well last night. They only finished with 16 assists. I'm sure their passes were super low. But they were great. I think that the Thunder have a good shot in game three, but this is still a historically good Spurs team. And who knows? I'm just excited. I'm just excited for a series. I'm glad that we got a series here. I'm just pumped to watch every minute of the rest of the series.
All I'm saying is that it's a conundrum for me, because I probably prefer them to be like 40-point blowouts every single time by the Thunder, just because you checked your pulse one night last of the time last night, beating at 100, you know, 4, 110 or something.
111. Come on, man.
For me, it's like the same thing. I mean, on pins and needles the whole time. Especially, like, you know, it's, you can't plan your entire world around Thunder. I found out, and so I have like plans on Friday night, and it's Mother's Day on Sunday, and you're like, how am I going to not ruin my entire life by telling everybody how much of a big deal this is to me? But, you know, it's great, you know, like, I got to be a good husband and celebrate my wife, but Thunder.
I know. It's one of my friends, Jeremy Lamb, called me, not Jeremy Lamb that plays for the Hornets, but another friend named Jeremy Lamb called me last night, and his signing off to me was, "That's great. I really loved watching these millionaires play a game and win a game for me. That was great." It's hard to explain it to people, but these games do matter. It's an incredible series, a matchup of two like sincere heavyweights. To watch them battle has been awesome, and so the continued Kawhi Leonard versus Kevin Durant is really fun. Letting Russell Westbrook get loose, watching LaMarcus Aldridge hit every shot, that's been fun. So I look forward to more of the same in Game 3. Thanks for listening to the Down Dunk Podcast. Thank you, John Hamm, for joining us. You can follow John on Twitter at John M. Hamm. Listen to him on The Franchise. And we will talk to you guys. We'll probably do a pod, a whole pod with all the guys on Friday to preview this game a little bit more. So we will talk to you again Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast, and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review, and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.